Every week, an ambassador from the Alt Weekly drops in to share their latest stories. This week, we have Luke Stoddard Nathan in the studio. Hi, Luke. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. You know, last week, they referred to me as a delegate. This time, I'm an ambassador. I don't know if I'm falling or
that sounds like a promotion to me.
Yeah. thank you for having me.
So what have you got for us this week?
So I have two stories, time permitting, that I'll talk to you guys about. One is, so let me back up. The governor had proposed to end, as part of the state budget, had proposed to end bail, or, you know, people having to pay money to get out of jail before trial, basically, end the practice of bail for misdemeanors and also some nonviolent felonies. That provision didn't make it into the state budget that was adopted last week for a variety of complicated reasons. The budget sort of negotiated sort of in secret, and then we kind of learn, you know, in dribs and drabs kind of how it's coming together and whatever. But in any case, last week I was sort of inspired by the talk about bail to reach out to Brendan Cox, who's the former police chief of Albany. He left in early 2017, and I had seen in a press release that he was kind of pretty forcefully advocating for this kind of bail reform. And I thought that was interesting because it's not every day that you see law enforcement kind of on the front lines of pushing for something like bail reform. And so we had a conversation, and there's a story about it in this week's issue that you can read if you want in more detail. But one of the interesting things that he said to me was that, you know, in public, you might not come across many people in law enforcement who support bail reform. But in private, if you sit down with them and talk to them, you know, you might get to some kind of consensus. And he said the same thing about sheriffs. He said that in private, some sheriffs have told him that they'd love to reduce their jail populations. But, you know, there are kind of political realities that sometimes take precedence.
Right. It would be difficult for me to imagine our Rensselaer County Sheriff Russo to be enthusiastic about reducing jail populations, especially given his support for the 287G program.
Yeah. I mean, that's obviously been in the news a lot lately. The 287G program, I guess I can explain or briefly, it was a program that he entered into with ICE, the Federal Immigration Office, that basically allows them to the Rensselaer County Sheriff to deputize a few corrections officers to basically become agents of ICE, and then, you know, if they were to release a detainee, upon release they might notify immigration officials, or they might look into, you know, an inmate's background, essentially. But anyway, so Brendan Cox, I guess maybe what he was perhaps best known for while he was with the Albany Police was bringing this program called Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion. This program to Albany Police. It's this diversion program. So the way it works is that police are kind of trained to, when they're encountering someone who is alleged to have committed a sort of petty crime like shoplifting or, you know, something kind of low level, if this person is maybe known to the police, or if this person is experiencing homelessness or has an addiction issue or something of that nature, they can, instead of arresting them, they can refer this person to like a case manager, who will then kind of conduct a needs assessment, find out, you know, what are this person's immediate needs, whether it's finding housing, or maybe they want to try to kick their addiction, or maybe they just want to do something more modest, or they'll kind of work with that person to try to find what they can do. And as long as this person completes this sort of individualized course of action, the charge is never filed and it goes away. And they've had about 100 people so far participate in this program. It's very kind of multifaceted. There's a kind of advisory board that's like has the mayor and the county executive on it. And then there's a more day-to-day kind of operations group, which is like the case managers and the cops and things. And so Brendan Cox actually left the police department to work for this national organization that kind of rolls out this program. And it's now in like something like 30 cities or 30 municipalities. It's in Albany. It's being explored in Rensselaer County in Schenectady. I asked him just before I came on here because I figured I'd be asked about what's happening here. But I haven't connected with him on that yet, but I think it's in a more preliminary kind of stage. But,
you know, that not to be skeptical.
Please.
But I'm just thinking about so-called repeat offenders, like you've just described, that are really they have either mental health issues or they have drug addiction issues or things like that, and it makes perfect sense to put those people more promptly in the care of people who are trained for that, as opposed to letting them sit in jail and processing the paperwork and over and over again. But I'm wondering if that becomes more effective and efficient, and then there turns out to be like a maybe a budget cut for the police departments because they're not going to be dealing with that so much anymore, that suddenly the police departments will change their mind about it.
Meaning, so I'm trying to follow the train of
meaning. There's a certain amount of money that's budgeted to any given police department based on the volume of traffic that they're dealing with and the manpower that they need. And if that shrinks because social caregivers are taking the place of that, whether the police department will suddenly become less enamored of changing around to that.
You think police won't like the program, perhaps, because it will ultimately result maybe in their budgets being cut or something like that? It's possible. I wanted to read a quote from what Brendan Cox told me when I kind of asked him, like, well, why does this program appeal to cops if it does? Or maybe it doesn't. Who knows? I doubt that they're a unified block and they all feel exactly the same way. But he said, quote, "It's frustrating when you arrest the same person over and over again and nothing changes." And I think that's what a lot of the cops see. It's like, I'm going to have to deal with this person for the 10th time this week. Something's got to change. I think they realize that there's some insanity to the way we run the criminal justice system, so they wanted a different tool. I suppose it's possible. And he was pretty honest too. He was saying like, cops are, they undergo all these different kinds of trainings. There's all these different kinds of methods, but at the end of the day, like they know, they learn, like maybe the main thing they learn is how to arrest people perhaps. And so that, like, if we're trying to use law enforcement to solve what's really a mental health kind of issue or what's a, whatever, there are limits to that approach, Yep.
So Brendan Cox, he was the chief in May of 2016 when the Break Free event occurred, right? In Albany, the big protest.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm just thinking about that because the police in that particular situation were going out of their way not to arrest protesters.
Right.
And the protests were going out of their way to get arrested.
what was the end?
No arrests.
Yeah, we talked about that. I asked him like, is one piece of the puzzle then, if we're talking about criminal justice reform, for the DA to stand up and say, I'm not going to prosecute marijuana possession, which is what like the DA in Philadelphia just kind of basically announced, Larry Krasner, a progressive DA who just got elected, whose people are excited about. And he said, yeah, that's part of it. David Suarez, who's the Albany County DA, I think made some pronouncement a few years ago to the effect of, we're not going to arrest people if they're peacefully protesting. Like, that's just going to be how it is. And what Brendan Cox said was, yeah, it's helpful when a DA stands up, but it's also helpful to have kind of a broad consensus of like, so it's not just the DA standing up there and saying that, because then perhaps more conservative areas like in the suburbs are going to be like, why are you not going to get the bad guys? Like what are you going to just give people carte blanche to do crimes? And, another example here, closer to home, Rensselaer County District Attorney Joel Abelov last year signed this memorandum of agreement with Walmart saying that he wouldn't, that Walmarts wouldn't call the police basically if people were arrested, if people shoplifted something of value that was less than like $100. And a lot of people, the same day that the Times Union reported this story, people were outraged, and Abelov rescinded the agreement, which is sort of amazing because it seemed, from the outside, or at least to me and probably to other people, that it seems like a fairly modest reform that might make a lot of sense considering the crowded of courts and like that, law enforcement always has to like prioritize certain cases over others. But it was not, it didn't last.
I thought you were going to say that there was like a rush on Walmart of petty theft, like it was a sale.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that really would happen, but Brendan Cox, when I mentioned that example, I think what comes to mind is like that it kind of spoke to how it's helpful when you are kind of enacting these reforms that can seem scary to people who kind of maybe just kind of dip in and say, what, you're going to let people off the hook easy? when there's a kind of broad-based kind of consensus among other elected officials. Kind of,
it's always an interesting, when you say the dipping and sort of fearfulness, I think a lot, I would imagine from the police as well, given that you were saying that a lot of police officers, when they're in uniform, will come out very negatively against these kinds of social reforms. And what it's curious to me, I don't know that we can know as civilians what the conversations are, what the difference is between or why the institutions, especially criminal justice institutions, have to present such a hard surface when the people inside actually have more nuanced opinions.
With that, I'll briefly, I'll go over my other story. I obtained through a Freedom of Information Law request, which is a way of getting documents that reporters and the public can use, a copy of this state report, the State Commission of Corrections, that the state regulators evaluated the Saratoga County Jail last summer and found kind of in a number of areas that the jail didn't meet certain minimum standards. And I guess I can read, like, for example, some inmates were administratively segregated, which is sort of a euphemism for solitary confinement, for up to 23 hours without receiving written notification of the reasons for their confinement as required by state regulations. That was probably one of the more, I think, serious, kind of policy areas that the regulators noted. Some of the other ones were kind of less dramatic, but in any case, the jail said in response that they were kind of working to address these, although they didn't respond to any of my requests for comment or for an interview. I didn't really hear from them, but I was told by the commission that the jail did say that they're working to address these problems, and the state is planning a follow up visit pretty soon to kind of check on the status of that progress. And I guess, like, the other interesting part about this story to me was that, while I was reporting the story, I found that the Saratoga County Jail has been relying on these variances, these capacity variances, or in other words, these kind of like short-term permission from the state to be able to house more inmates than they otherwise would. The capacity of the jail normally is about 200, but the capacity with these variances is about 250, and they're allowed to double cell, put two inmates to one cell in certain areas of the jail if necessary, which is not always the case. And I guess that stuck out to me. And, you know, there's a lot of debate right now in Saratoga County because they're trying to build this new public safety building that might make more space for them to kind of re-engineer the space within the jail to account to allow for more inmates to be held. And finally, just to tie it all back together with the bail reform thing, I asked the Saratoga County District Attorney, who's a Republican, who's up for re-election and facing a primary challenge. You know, just knowing that the jail has been relying on these capacity variances, do you take that into consideration at all when you think about making bail release status negotiations or imposing or asking for certain sentencing, knowing that the jail is kind of at this capacity? And she said no. She said the short answer to your question is no, basically. And then she said, you know, for cases, we just consider the facts and the circumstances of the case. And I guess that maybe is the right answer. I don't know. But to me, it seemed like I found myself wondering, you know, in this moment of kind of pushing for criminal justice reform, for people thinking more about mass incarceration, you know, is that so crazy to think about what the capacity of your jail is before you, you know, ask for a certain sentence or ask for a certain bail? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, so I think we're about out of time, which is too bad because we could talk for a long time about this. I've had some direct experience as an activist in New York City jails where they basically, you know, cram you in like sardines. So it's a different world.
Yeah.
But that's all we have for today. So thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Thank you both.
That was Luke Stoddard-Nathan of the Alt Weekly.